Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we sat down with movement disorder experts Stuart Isaacson and Rajesh Pawa to discuss the recent FDA approval of SPN 830, an apomorphine infusion device, as a new treatment for Parkinson's disease. Isaacson, director of the Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center of Boca Raton, and Pawa, the Laverne and Joyce Ryder Professor of Neurology at the University of Kansas Medical Center, discussed the significance of the approval, considerations for patient selection with the treatment, as well as the studies supporting its safety and efficacy. In addition, the duo discussed how this approval, along with other recent approvals in Parkinson's, speak to the progress the clinical and research community has made over the years. Let's dive in.
Well, Raj, we're really excited to have an APGO available in the U.S. now. It's been available for so long in Europe and Asia and Australia. Any thoughts on what this means to the Parkinson's community in the States?
I think this is very exciting. One of the challenges we have faced for years is patients who have off time or motor fluctuations during the day. And we do know, in spite of using multiple adjunctive therapies, patients continue to have off time. Of course, one option has been using deep brain stimulation. But it'd be nice if we had something intermediate in between where patients did not require surgery, but could stay on pretty much all day long. And ONAPGO is one of those options that we will now have available that gives the patient on throughout the day and not having these fluctuations through the day. So I think this is very exciting for patients with Parkinson's. Even though it has come to U.S. Over 30 years after it has been available in Europe.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the patients that we've seen who've gotten it in Europe and spent some time in the States or talking with our peers in Europe and Australia and then actually seeing some of their patients at meetings over there, it really seems to be a therapy that can make the good on time, more consistent throughout the waking day. And I think it's going to be a big advantage for patients who continue to struggle with off time and limited good on time, probably half their waking day. And now they'll have something that they can use added on to their current therapies to make that more consistent.
The next question is, can you guys discuss how ONAPGO is administered and how would patients and families know if this treatment is right for them?
Well, ONAPGO is put on every day. It's put on with a cannula that connects to this device that administers this pre-filled medication continuously from the morning throughout the day and until nighttime when it's taken off before bed, administering just beneath the skin in what's called subcutaneous area, this medication called apomorphine. And when it goes just beneath the skin, it goes into the blood vessels beneath the skin and goes directly into the circulating blood and goes straight to the brain directly, bypassing all the challenges that oral levodopa has in trying to go from the mouth to the stomach to the bloodstream to the brain, get converted to dopamine, and then have to activate the postsynaptic dopamine receptors. In contrast, by delivering this just beneath the skin, it goes directly into the circulating bloodstream to the brain and directly activates those dopamine receptors. So I think it's something that has a very robust and reliable effect in our patients.
Yeah, and you know, the important point to remember is apomorphine is as effective as levodopa. So it gives us an option to give patients improvement that is similar to levodopa, with more good on time during the day. As far as using it, it's important to remember that the patient actually uses a small applicator to put this on their skin. And what ends up being on a skin is a small Band-Aid-like part. And the catheter that goes underneath is so tiny that most of the patients don't even feel that the catheter has already gone into the subcutaneous space. So it is much easier. The patients can put this on every morning and connect it to the pump and get good on time throughout the day.
It's interesting what you say, Raj, about being as robust in its effect as levodopa or dopamine. It has a very similar structure, apomorphine, to dopamine, and has a very similar receptor profile affinities. I think for this reason, it works as well as dopamine or levodopa works, but does it work consistently by bypassing the peripheral and central challenges?
And you know, the other thing is, even though it is approved for 16 hours during the waking day, off-label, some patients who are having a lot of difficulty at night may continue it through the night so that they may do better in the mornings too.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Isaacson and Dr. Pawa to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on March 20th, the FDA approved vutrisiran, marketed as Amvutra, as a new treatment for cardiomyopathy associated with wild-type or hereditary transthyretin-mediated amyloidosis, or ATTR, in adults. The expanded indication makes vutrisiran both the first and only FDA-approved therapy for both the cardiomyopathy and polyneuropathy manifestations of ATTR amyloidosis. Less than a week later, on March 25th, the FDA accepted Sanofi's regulatory submission for tolebrutinib as a potential treatment for patients with non-relapsing secondary progressive multiple sclerosis, assigning the agent a PDUFA date of September 28th. If approved, tolebrutinib would become the first and only brain-penetrant BTK inhibitor marketed for the treatment of MS and the first specific for non-relapsing secondary progressive MS. Lastly, on March 25th, Cassava Sciences announced negative data from its Phase 3 REFOCUS-ALZ trial of simufilam in patients with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. Because the trial failed to meet its co-primary, secondary, and exploratory biomarker endpoints, the company officially discontinued the drug's development. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to our conversation with Dr. Isaacson and Dr. Pawa. The next question for you guys is a little bit more focused on how we got to this point. So, although the study was conducted several years ago, can you discuss some of the findings from Toledo, as well as any other supportive data that backed the approval of SPN 830?
Yeah, we know ANAPCO has a long-standing information in the literature for decades. It's been available in Europe and Australia and then Asia. We have a lot of small case reports and anecdotal evidence and retrospective analyses. And then more recently, this Toledo study, which was a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled study, demonstrated the efficacy, safety, and tolerability of ANAPCO versus placebo. And then in a one-year open-label safety extension of Toledo, complemented by a U.S.-based one-year open-label a safety study that had some efficacy endpoints in it and went on for a year so we could gain information about how this would work in the U.S., demonstrated the safety and tolerability as well as the efficacy. So I think we have a lot of information about this. It's really a tried and true therapy globally, now available in the U.S. and the initial 100 or so patients that were part of the U.S. Trial. I think we've gained some important information, namely that in this U.S.-based clinic, starting ANAPCO as an outpatient in U.S. patients and just adding it on to what they're already taking, we had a very similar outcomes in terms of efficacy and tolerability as the Europeans who have decades of experience using ANAPCO had. So I think we can get going with this for our patients, expecting to have similar benefits.
Yeah, I think there have been a lot of open label studies that have been done over the past 30 years, and we did not have a placebo controlled study, and I think that was one of the challenges why it was not approved for use in United States. So I think what the study Toledo helped us with was to show compared to patients who got placebo, we were able to reduce their off time during the day and improve their good on time during the day, which is what we really were aiming for. So the thing is, the improvement in on time did significantly improve how they did during the day. Of course, as we know with apomorphine, we have to slowly titrate the dose up. And just like with the injectable apomorphine, the maximum dose of subcutaneous infusion is about 6 milligrams per day. And the other thing that the study did show us that every patient does not need 6 milligrams a day. In fact, most of the patients are able to get around by approximately 4 milligrams a day to improve their symptoms. Of course, some of the common side effects we see with the injections, we can also see with infusion, such as nausea, lightheadedness, daytime sleepiness. But again, these are mild to moderate side effects and led to definitely a significant improvement in their off time.
A lot of great insight. Last question for you guys, and I appreciate you both taking some time out of your day. A last question for you guys. There's been a lot of, or a few several approvals in the Parkinson's community in the recent months, including fos-carbidopa, fos-levodopa, as well as Medtronic's adaptive DBS, in addition to SPN 830. So how do these approvals speak to the years of progress from the research community? And what newfound hope does this bring to patients and their families with Parkinson's?
Every new therapy that is approved for Parkinson's is a step forward as far as improvement in symptoms is concerned. And 2024, 2025, really, we have seen quite a few new things happening. We saw an oral longer-acting carbidopa-levodopa extended-release capsules. We saw subcutaneous fos-carbidopa, fos-levodopa infusion. We saw subcutaneous apomorphine infusions. And when we talk about deep brain stimulation, actually, we are seeing better progress and better options with that. We did see Medtronic coming up with their adaptive stimulation. And what that basically means is that we are setting up parameters in the IPG that can actually go up and come down depending on patient symptoms. In other words, if their tremor gets worse, the stimulation can increase to control their tremors. If their dyskinesias gets worse, the stimulation will decrease to decrease their dyskinesias. So the patient doesn't have to do anything. We still set the parameters within a small range that automatically can be adjusted depending upon the waveforms that are happening in the brain. The other thing we saw is with another device, the Boston device, which actually one step ahead with their visual programming, where the software using artificial intelligence can actually pick up the contact as well as tell what stimulation parameters need to be set. So that's another major improvement that we have seen with deep brain stimulation. But the other three therapies have been equally effective as far as newer therapies are concerned. Stu, what would you say on that?
Well, I think we're always looking for better treatments for our patients. I think having a NAPGO is a better treatment. I think it complements these newer levodopa-based therapies that have become newly available, as Dr. Pawa points out, Crexont and Vyalev, and I think there's new ones on the horizon that we're very excited about, and hopefully they'll pass muster and gain approval to help our patients. We're also looking at a variety of medications for non-motor symptoms and also for trying to slow the progression of Parkinson's disease, or hopefully ultimately to diagnose it in the prodromal or preclinical stage and try to prevent it. So I think a lot of ongoing research programs that give us great hope for better therapies.
And one of the challenges that will be there is patients trying to decide between these different new therapies, whether to use the fos-carbidopa, fos-levodopa infusion, or whether using apomorphine infusion. And again, people would have to look at the patient, how they are, what's the best improvement they're looking at, what potential side effects to keep in mind. And similarly, with the different deep brain stimulation implants, which would work the best for the patient. So all these are things that gives us, as well as patients, increased options to improve their off time and have more good on time during the day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.